Hey guys, welcome back. Welcome in. Thanks for joining us one more time. I'm Pastor Dave, sitting with Randall, the armor bearer. We are
They That Believe.
This is where church culture meets pop culture. We talk entertainment news, world news, current events, geek news, all filtered through a lens of lifestyle Christianity. We're coming back from our post-Halloween hiatus, just a break of a week or so. We had to take a few days. Randall's been in bed, not well. He's been unable to get out of bed. He's been crying. I had to take him some Play-Doh and some coloring books.
Yeah.
Fortunately, you already had an emotional service, emotional support dog.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And what else? Some cookies and things to make you feel better, because he's just been...
I was in a safe zone.
I had to be in my safe zone. I had to coax him out of his safe space, and I had to lie to him and tell him it was safe to come out again. I don't know if it is or not. No, of course. Just kidding. We'll hit a little bit of post-election blues today. Not a lot. There's really not much point in it. I've probably got more than enough to say. I'm sure Randall's got a lot to say. If he wants to, he may not. But I got to thinking about it last night before we came in to sit down. I'm thinking, we're just two more voices out there in a sea of what's already too much anyway, probably. Right. So, I mean, I could say a lot, but I don't know that I have a lot to add. Does that make sense?
Right. I think everything's been said.
I don't know. I have a lot of extra insights. So, what was your... I haven't really talked to you that much since Halloween and Election Day and all that. What was your Election Day or Election Week experience like?
Let's see.
I'm really interested to know what's happening in your social media world. What kind of things you were seeing in Facebook feed? And
I think the best thing to come out of this is the Obama-Biden memes that are coming out.
Right.
I love those. I could probably watch those all day.
Yeah, what are the good ones that you may have seen?
Oh, just, you know, the ones where, like, Joe Biden's sitting there with the football, and he's like, okay, when he comes in, you duck, and I'm going to hit him. And Bowen's like, no, Joe, no. But, yeah, I love those.
It was really neat. We've talked in here. If you live off somewhere else and aren't familiar kind of with our patch of the world, you get the idea, the correct idea, that we're in a rural area and in a small town. And one of the things that I was really tickled about, and I just, you know, you make these life observations, and Tuesday, which was Election Day, I left the house. I went to go vote. I went to the post office, and I hit the Dollar General store on the way back. I was back home in 30 minutes.
Well, I was seeing all these posts with all these lines of people outside the election, and I was like, I walked right in.
Yep.
Walked right to the election booth.
I did voting. I did the post office, and I did Dollar General, and I was back home in a half hour. Now, a friend of mine, he did grow up around here. He's from this area, so it was definitely... there was nothing mean-spirited about it. He knew what I was talking about, but he goes, he said, well, you forgot to tell people that they're all in the same building. I said, well, we're country, but we're not quite
not that
country.
Bad. Yeah. You got to go to the fire hall, then the post office, and the dollar stores, of course.
Separate. Yeah. I mean, they're all, within a mile of each other.
Yeah.
Like the hair salon where you can get your tires rotated while you get your hair done. You know? But, yeah, man, it's just been, I don't know, I guess I knew things were going to be pretty rough and pretty bad, but it's been really ugly. I'm kind of glad that now we can start and kind of sit down and laugh, although that, I don't know there's really much to laugh at. I don't think it's very funny.
No.
I've never seen vitriol like this.
No.
Let me ask you this, because I guess there's no point in us evaluating everything we've seen. Everybody's seen it and heard it and all this, but do you think this has a shelf life? Is there a point when this is going to recede a little bit? Will we return to some sense of normalcy at some point? I mean, it's never going to be completely quiet. We're going to have people, I've said before, that are going to whine for at least 4 years.
Yeah.
Or is it just going to be this? I mean, what's the capacity of these people to continue? How much stamina do you think they have?
Well, you know, I think it's kind of like the stages of grief. At some point, they're just going to have to accept that this is the way it is. You know, I don't know if that's going to take a year or, you know, when he gets actually into office in January or, you know, I don't know. But at some point, he's going to be the president. You're going to have to either live with it or, you know, move to Canada. If you're, you know, Canada's got some pretty strict immigration laws now, though, so you might have some problems.
Since everybody else is so racist, why do these people not want to move to Mexico?
Man, I go Mexico first.
I would go to Mexico before I'd go to Canada.
Warm weather, beaches, Canada. What do you got, Canada? You got moose and snow. I mean, that's pretty much it.
Yeah, I don't know, but it's funny to me. They never say that, and yeah. I think, well, aren't you being racist? Why would you? You want to go to where the white people are? It's ridiculous. Well, how much of it is, do you even think, authentic as far as, like, are the people? Because, you know, now we've seen pictures of the buses parked a couple of blocks away, mm-hmm. and the ads in Craigslist and in the newspaper come protest for $15 an hour. Don't you think, and I don't mean to be, you know, I don't want to go all Alex Jones on everybody, but don't you really get the sense that at least some of this, I don't know how much, but some of this, it's really orchestrated.
Yeah, you know, and the one thing I've noticed is the millennials, and I hate to talk about millennials like they're bad or something, but
go ahead, and I know what you're feeling, and I'll say something about that.
The millennials are always open for an event. You know what I mean? They're always like,
a happening,
yeah. And if there's something that's going on, whether it's something that they're agreeing or not, but if there's a bunch of people there, you can get some millennials to show up, you know?
It's sort of like Burning Man without the music.
Yeah.
Without any rock bands. Yeah. Now, to that, you were talking about the millennials. And I heard somebody say this a couple of days ago, because I've kind of been like, everybody's looking at them like it's a bunch of, and really we say millennials, it's a lot of 20-something-year-old white girls.
Yeah. In their Uggs with their pumpkin spice latte.
And and their emotional support dogs.
Right.
It really is not, and it's hard when you watch the news, you look at the internet. I really think this is a very small faction.
Yeah.
I believe that it is. Mm-hmm. And here's what I would suggest to everybody today, and I'll be honest, I did not do it this past week, and I kind of wish I had. If you will turn off the news and turn off the internet, you will get a different sense of reality.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is almost a skewed sense of reality. And when I think about, and I don't know just a whole lot of them anymore, but that age group, those millennials, as we call them, if you're not looking at television and you're not looking at the internet and you just know your own real world experience, mm-hmm. your opinion of millennials would probably improve very greatly.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Because I don't see any of this in my community.
Yeah.
I don't see any of this where we live.
No. I don't think you're... Well, I mean, we live in Tennessee, so, I mean, that's a pretty well Republican stronghold state. I don't even think they campaign here anymore.
We're a red state.
Yeah.
Well, you're correct there. Let me dial it in a little differently then. Being in West Tennessee, which at one point in time used to be a Democratic stronghold.
Right.
And it has not been for several years.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess we're thoroughly red state now. But I don't see... but even in the other ones, you know, there's still that faction of leftist college kids. Or at least that's the way it's presented. What I'm saying is, not to be that guy, the conspiratorial or anything, but I have this sense or this feeling, I can't even describe it, like an intuition that I'm being fed an image or an idea about how things are that I don't always think is true.
Well, you know, I'm in college now. And, you know, when I was in my 20s, you know, looking at if I had been in college in my 20s and seeing the stuff that comes at you in college, like I can kind of see the underneath of it. Like right now, I'm taking a course on constitutional government. It's a survey of constitutional government.
Right.
And just so happens, in the middle of the election, I was in the middle of the Electoral College and presidencies and all that stuff, you know. And the text is kind of slanted very liberal.
Yeah.
And if you weren't able to see underneath that's the way it's slanted, you'd come out of that thinking, oh my gosh, you know, Republicans are horrible.
Well, okay. I don't think you'd have a hard time convincing anyone of that.
Yeah.
When there's a common criticism about what's happening on our campuses, mm-hmm. or that academia is very, not even liberal, leftist at this point. And there was an incident this past week at SMU, sadly, Southern Methodist University. Although they won't tell you that. That's what SMU means.
Mm-hmm.
I had to go to their website and dig to find, like, I had to navigate through 7 or 8 gates of purgatory to actually find the words Southern Methodist University. And when I found it in the next sentence, it immediately they were like, but we're non-sectarian and we support the dignity of all people. You know, this self-hatred that uh-huh. I talk about all the time. We hate ourselves that we're Christians or Methodists or whatever else. So anyway, the Southern Methodist University, which is in Texas, and they had planned, someone had invited the 14 years old, the daughter of one of the police officers who was ambushed, murdered, killed in the riots. Mm-hmm. And she was going to come to a volleyball game and give, sort of like you give the first pitch at the World Series, she was going to give the first serve at the volleyball game and be honored, and her family and all this. They had the heartlessness to, days before the event, to send a letter or an email back to the family that says, we've changed our, it was after the election. Uh-huh. Due to the events of this week, we think it would be insensitive and we're going to have to rescind our invitation, but you can go after the game and get autographs from, because that's what everybody wants is autographs, right, from the SMU volleyball team.
Yeah.
Well, the social media blitz on them was crippling. Their star rating on, I saw, the last time I looked at it was yesterday, and it had been on a steady decline. It had gone from, you know, 4 or 5 down to 2.1. Mm. People were outraged. And of course, then SMU comes back with a very disingenuous kind of feeling apology and blamed it on communication, and somebody sent something that didn't get approval and it didn't ring true. Actually, they made a lot of missteps. One of the things they did was when the backlash got heavy on them and they sent this apology letter out, they didn't give it to the family first. They went and addressed the problem on social media.
Oh,
you see what I'm saying?
Sweet.
They were trying to put out the social media fire.
Uh-huh.
Before actually addressing,
so they're putting the out the fire before there was even, right, a fire. And then
I just, out of curiosity, I went over to the Facebook page, and I don't know the lady, we're not acquainted, but the widow of, uh-huh, the fallen officer, I go over to her Facebook page, and in her feed, people who had been online discussing this, mm-hmm, were telling her about it.
Hmm.
And I thought, okay, that's a misstep right, yeah, there. The other misstep that they made, the letter, the apology letter, as it were, and they said, well, we're extending our invitation again. You're invited, you're, mm-hmm, disinvited, now, yeah, you're reinvited. It had no signature on it. It was written, it said, you know, in the volleyball department and this and that, and it didn't come from anyone.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't have the university president or the volleyball coach, and it kept using this expression, SMU volleyball wants this, and SMU volleyball is sorry, and, mm-hmm, and I'm like, are we to believe that an SMU volleyball wrote this? You know, that whose authority is this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, who wrote this? Wilson. And so then I go to the, you know, to their website, and once you go to the SMU website and start looking around, you understand it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's horrible. And this is Southern Methodist University in the heart of Texas.
In Texas.
They're in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and they're horribly leftist.
Mm-hmm.
Horribly leftist. When they had the Veterans Day observance, the SMU president, university president, wrote one paragraph about thank you to veterans, and then wrote two pages about diversity and inclusion, and I'll tell everybody if they're not happy, you know, in 4 years we can try again.
Good
and this
Lord.
Was in a letter to talk about Veterans Day.
Yeah.
Horribly leftist. And again, very disturbed as a police officer,
mm-hmm,
as a United Methodist, to when I go to the page and I'm like, I'm pretty sure this is Southern Methodist University.
Yeah.
And I had to navigate all over that place until I finally found the words. And then, like I said, when I did, there was almost an immediate disassociation with it. And a lot of people were taking them to task who don't really know. All they know, they've never, maybe not, are not familiar with the university. But if somebody says, well, it's SMU, it's a Methodist university, it's a Christian school, which, you know, in many ways is not. Mm-hmm. They have tried to become more secular, non-sectarian is their words. Well, you know, people ripped them for that. Mm-hmm. And even my thoughts on it, or my comments, were because they were worried that to honor the family of this murdered police officer would be insensitive. And I said to the university, I said, if anybody had any doubt about the definition of insensitivity, you have demonstrated it very well.
Right.
And bordering on cruel.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next discussion was, once they invited and disinvited and re-invited, what should be done? Should the family go, or just tell them, you know, here's what you can do with your volleyball? Or, you know, my idea was, you know, let them go, and then have, because there had been such a social media backlash, and the university still today, I imagine, if you're listening, if you go look at SMU's webpage, you'll probably see they're still taking a beating for. My suggestion was, well, maybe they go and you get the word out to everybody in the area, every police officer, every fireman, firefighter.
Fire person.
Every EMT, every military personnel, Cub Scouts, anybody that can show up, you know, in a uniform and stand at attention. And I would fill that place up.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, apparently, this is in a long history of things, that they had some sort of memorial or tried to do some sort of event for fallen officers in the past. And there were a bunch of protests. Some went down into the, not the end zone. What do you have in the, like in a gymnasium?
Oh, the,
I don't know what you call it.
In the red or whatever.
Under the scoreboards, and they kneeled and put their, you know, fists in the air. And so there's the climate anyway. And I guess I see where they're coming from, but if you're anticipating trouble, but yet they still have, you know, SMU has a university police department, which is fully accredited and, you know, not a bad department. And they have police officers everywhere when they have events. So I don't know. I don't know where I was going with all that. But
do you think that, you know, colleges where you're supposed to go to get your,
that's what we were talking about,
secondary, you know, where you're supposed to get your knowledge, where you're supposed to kind of grow up, don't you think they should be kind of even with, I mean, they should be kind of impartial?
Not even that. It's supposed to be, higher education is where young adults are supposed to be taught critical thinking.
Right, to develop their own.
To develop critical thinking skills. It's not designed to, like, and I remember in high school, you know, like our high school teachers trying to explain this to us, you know, and it's the difference between, I hate it when I hear people say, like, well, I didn't want to go to college. I hated high school and I was no good at school. And I'm like, you completely missed the point.
Right.
You know, you're in high school, you got to learn what people are feeding you, what you have to learn, reading, writing, and arithmetic and things like that. But when you get to university level, you have a lot more choice.
Mm-hmm.
You can study things that interest you. And you can select classes and courses and things where you would never be allowed to speak up in a high school class.
Right.
You can in a college class. It's supposed to be. It used to be anyway. Because the idea is we promote critical thinking. We want the, you know, yeah, we'll teach you some science, but you also have to learn the process. You have to learn the process of critical thinking. And you've correctly identified that that's gone.
Yeah.
Now it's, we're going to control speech. If, you know, this person is on a campus speaking tour, somebody from the alt-right or whatever, Milo Yiannopoulos, who we're talking about, he's run into this, Ben Shapiro's run into this, folks that are not allowed, or if they are allowed, there's protest, and it, this effort to silence speech for no other reason than I don't like it.
Yeah.
And that's a little bit of what we've seen this past week. It's like, I don't like this. I don't like the results.
Well, that's where you
and get the, I refuse to accept it.
That's where you get the snowflakes from. Nobody's ever put anything in front of them that's actually going to get them to think or to disagree with something without being just, well, I'm not going to pay attention to that. I'm not going to listen to that. Well, you know, best part of being an American is that when someone has a different view than you, you listen to them. You know, if you don't agree, you give a reason why you don't disagree. You don't just...
They're racist.
Yeah, you don't just turn around and walk off.
I'm not going to listen to it. Yeah, I don't have to listen to it. It's hate speech.
Right. And it really bothers me that, like, these people are going to grow up and be leaders and educators and...
That's what I think a lot, too, is when I see people, you know, prostrate and weeping and having to get coloring books and candy and...
yeah.
And puppies and Play-Doh.
Take a week off school. They closed colleges down for a week.
Right. You know? Canceling classes and stuff. In a broader sense, do you have the proper life skills?
Yeah.
Skills is not the word. Character, to me, is what it comes down to.
Do you have the ability to adult after that point?
Adult. Adulting. Yeah. I've been using that a lot as a verb. I'm hoping that'll kind of catch up. As I say, some people are not good at adulting.
Right.
And here's kind of my experience of starting this past week. I'm not going to be one of these people that stands up and says, well, I knew it. I've been telling you for months, if you could read the signs and read the numbers and see through it all, that you knew he was going. No, I didn't.
It was really a crapshoot. I mean, in fact, most of the major publications had Hillary winning, even up until the day of the election.
Well, yeah, they did. But and when you, hindsight's 20/20, looking back now and kind of reading the writing on the wall, it all kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
You're either one of those people that was smart enough to see it then, those people that were out there going, look, he's probably going to win this thing.
Yeah.
Or you're people like me that are like, nah, you know. But here's my point in all that. And I didn't want to take any credit for trying to be one of those people like, oh, I saw it coming. I didn't. Mm-hmm. I didn't. I was like pretty much most of the other people in the country who just assumed that she had this thing in the bag.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's the idea. I went to bed that night, more correctly, during the day, because I sleep during the day, but you understand what I mean.
Right.
I went to bed that night, quote unquote, fully expecting that she was going to win.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what? I slept okay. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It didn't matter if that's the outcome that I wanted or anything. I voted, went to the post office and the dollar store and came back home, went to sleep, and I was okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I had already in my mind, I had accepted that, and let's assume that it had gone that way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, either way,
yeah,
nothing would have changed for me. I got up that evening and I put my pants on and I made my coffee and I would not have fallen apart.
Here's the only thing that's bothering me, and I'm for sure not a Hillary supporter. I've never been a Democrat. I don't vote Democrat. I don't, you know, but the problem is that Trump has got the presidency. The House and Senate are super close to getting a 2/3 majority.
Oh, yeah.
By the time the next midterms come around, it could really happen.
Oh, yeah.
So then you get into things where they can start rewriting the Constitution. I mean, very easily they could change the whole scope of politics in America. Not to mention Supreme Court candidates, changing the judiciary system.
Right.
I really think that America needs to step back and think about where it's going and maybe changing some stuff that, you know, is going bad.
Well, and now this is one thing where I will try to take a little credit, what I said. And it really didn't have to do with, like, I'm intelligent and it's my insight. It more, I don't know. I'd have to go back and kind of listen to see. I know I've commented along the way where we've kind of charted my own personal progress with this thing, you know, where right. I went from the beginning of the year where I didn't want to participate at all to deciding that I would vote. And then even to the point that after the events of this week and after the election, having gone full circle from I'm disgusted with all this and I don't want to participate to now, honestly, dude, I feel good.
Yeah.
I feel good about it. And here's what those folks that are falling apart, that are screaming, that are being ugly, here's what they don't get. The things that you're reflecting right now are exactly what people were pushing back against.
Right.
This election was a response to what you're doing right now.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'll say is then harken back to what I said, you know, a few weeks ago when we were in here. It's not about an individual or an individual candidate. Mm-hmm. It's not about a cult of personality, you know, Hillary or Donald Trump or anything. It's about where we're going as a country. It's about that cultural mood, that cultural needle. I'm trying to push it back. Well, you, what about him? You don't like him? It doesn't matter what I think about him. Mm-hmm. It matters kind of, I'm being awkward, big picture kind of thing. The good thing I'll say about this, and again, I could be wrong. I mean, again, we're just two voices out there in the maelstrom of this talk, but I don't think that you're... And there's an anti-establishment pushback. Mm-hmm. So when you talk about, well, I'm worried about the Republicans and this and that, well, your establishments, your Paul Ryans and folks like that, mm-hmm. they're on the hot seat. Yeah. So don't make any assumptions that it's going to be easy for them. It's not. Mm-hmm. However, I don't get the sense that the true conservatives are interested in changing or rewriting the Constitution at all. Mm-hmm. I think if anything, they want to preserve it.
Right.
And maybe this is a pushback of things in the last few years where we feel like that's been subverted. I'm not saying, I don't know, that's for other analysts, but you cheapen the conversation. And again, I've said this before, we've used, you know, phobe and all the isms, mm-hmm. The racisms and the sexisms and the phobias, and those have been used so early and so often that they have no meaning anymore. Like, people right. dismiss it. Mm-hmm. So when you say that to somebody, it has no effect. You know, people are dismissive of that. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a time when somebody, think about this. There's a time when somebody might have said to you, you know what, Randall, you're pretty racist, dude. Mm-hmm. That would have maybe, you would have kind of, it would have got your attention.
Yeah.
You would have said, whoa.
Now it's a joke.
I don't think that about myself. Why would somebody think that? Yeah. You know, you might reflect on it for a moment. Now, you go, yeah, right. Okay. Yeah. All right.
I see the kids at school all the time calling each other racist. It's like.
Exactly.
You know what? It's a joke. It's something they use to.
And really what it means is you disagree with me.
Right.
You don't like the same policies that I like. And here's the truth of it, dude. Donald Trump got more Hispanic vote than Romney got.
Right. You know, and what bugs me.
And it's because those are people that see, look, it's about, because who are Hispanic people largely? And, it's dangerous to generalize. I guess that's racist. But they're usually religious people.
Right. Like 90% Catholic, you know. Yep,
in a lot of ways. And their family. Uh-huh. We talk about families,
extreme
right?
Extreme hard workers.
And, Are they interested in a lot of the weird stuff that the left is pushing?
No.
And I don't, again, oh man, I hate to be that guy or go down this road, but I had the thought this week, so I guess I just got to be honest with you. I'm watching this stuff on the news, and you know, you're watching these people and their protests and whatever, and there's a couple of different incidents that I saw, one of which comes to mind, and I'm sorry, I don't want to be gross or anything. Well, I mean, it happened. I'll be as delicate as I can, where some lady defecated
uh-huh.
on a sign
and then smeared it with her bare hands
and played with her own poop. And yeah. Listen, man, that's demonic.
Uh-huh.
There is a dark spirit.
Yeah.
There is some demonic spirits out there. That's not, that's even, you know, because we're laughing about, you know, mm-hmm. the puppies and coloring books and safe spaces. We're seeing it. It's like the curtain is kind of being pulled back, yeah. and it's revealing a lot of this.
Well, I mean, you know, that person can drive a car, can, you know, I mean, she's walking among us right now, and she's got that much anger in her heart about something that is just something that happened. Like, she's not going to change it.
Animals yeah. at the zoo, man, playing with your own feces. I mean, I don't know, dude. It's absolutely...
See, it,
demonic. There's a dark spirit out there, buddy.
It bugs me, though, because there are several people that are victims of sexism, are victims of racism, that have had bad, really bad things happen to them in their life. And now their whole experience is cheapened because
yep.
as a society, we just don't care anymore about that
and
stuff.
One of the things I saw right before we came in here and sat down, before you came in, just scrolling through my phone and stuff, somebody was there was a report that Rosie O'Donnell was posting nude pictures of Melania Trump on Twitter.
Yeah.
And I thought, why is that okay?
Yeah, it's one thing to disagree with Trump, but don't bring his wife into this whole deal. She has nothing to do with that.
But I mean, after everything that you've already said about him, after everything we've already said about the Clintons.
Yeah.
And all these weird sex allegations and rape and child stuff. And why is that okay?
Yeah.
Why is it then okay? I don't understand the correlation between I have a problem with ugly sexual talk. I have a problem with allegations of rape. I have a problem with, so I'm going to post nude pictures of the man's wife on the internet.
Right.
I don't understand, man. Mm-mm. It's so vile.
I know. It's looking at the two parties, you would expect a reaction like this from the gun-toting Republicans. But they've been, I mean, in any election that Democrats won, they've been ready to just accept things and move on with it.
Right. You know, never rioting or hurting, physically hurting and killing people. You know, they can be vocal and can be over the top, you know.
Yeah.
Your right wingers and stuff. But here's the thing. Again, if you're one of the folks that are sympathetic to what you've seen this week, here's what I'm pointing out to you. That behavior and that level of hysteria and hyperbole is exactly what the country is pushing back against. Mm-hmm. You're not discouraging those on the far right or the alt-right. Mm-hmm. You're encouraging them.
Right. Now they know they're doing the right thing.
And I don't necessarily know that I count myself in those camps, but now as I sit here, I just said it a few minutes ago. I said, I feel even better.
Yeah.
About not better about the situation, but I feel better about what I did, about my vote, and about I'm going, yes, we got to change the course of this.
Right.
We got to right this ship. It brings up a few peripherals. Here's and talking about, you know, those on the right that are now getting empowered. A lot of calls for now it's time to, you know, prosecute and put Hillary in jail and all this. Mm-hmm. I have an idea about that. And I don't think a lot of people are going to be happy. I don't think that's going to happen.
No, I don't think so either. It's probably for the best, too.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was going to say. Do you think we need to? Now, I'm not saying that it wouldn't be earned or deserved, mm-hmm. but I'm hard-pressed to think at this point that there's anybody around Donald Trump that's going...
Push to get her put in front of a court
or whatever. I don't think that's going to make anything any better. I think it would hurt. It would hurt everybody.
Yeah, you really just need to get this election behind us, move on, and that's just going to bring up a bunch of stuff from the past that just needs to be gone through. You know?
In the same way with, you know, the establishment Republicans, everybody is a little watchful. They're very watchful now about is he going to flex the hammer? Mm-hmm. on your Paul Ryans and guys like that who've already changed their tune. Boy, they're all ready to get along now. Or is he going to, you know, because he seems to have adopted a little bit of a conciliatory tone. The question is that Donald being conciliatory or is that Donald hiding in the bushes?
Well, you know, I think with his, because I've been there. I mean, I haven't been in his, anywhere close to his level as far as business leadership goes. But as a business leader, you know, your goal is not to go in there and just shake everything up and change things. Your goal is to get everybody working together to move towards a common goal. And I think that's probably what he's going to try to do. I hope that's what he's going to try to do.
But what he's encountering, though, is a base of voters who feel like they put him in there for that, though.
Yeah.
So you see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Are they then going to, you know, Donald has betrayed us.
I don't think
so. By trying to get along with, you know.
I think the proof's going to be in the pudding. I think once he shows them that, you know. Because the way government has been over the past several years is not working. It's just a huge stalemate. And if he shows that good things can possibly come out of government when you can cross the aisles, when you can break the ties, when you can do things as a country needs.
Right. Diplomacy.
That's what we need.
Compromise, which became an ugly word for so long. We will not compromise. We will not. You must. And I think that's one of the pluses, again, I've talked before about how I would vote straight party ticket. One of the pluses of having a majority, at least for a period of a certain party. I saw people calling some of my leftist acquaintances immediately calling for obstructionism.
Yeah.
They were like, well, we need to get in there and make sure that everything he does is everything. You know what I mean? Regardless, right. we need to be obstructionist about everything, just like they've been to Obama for, you know, 8 years.
And see, what's that help?
Like, that's not the way to do business.
Yeah, what's that going to end up helping? I mean, we need, this country needs to move in a positive direction, needs to get some stuff done. We've got some serious problems.
The other thing I've seen, too, I'm sure you've seen this, is the, as always happens, losers always come out and then start going on about the Electoral College. And we've got a generation of young people who don't, I don't know if they didn't have civics class, they don't understand these things.
They don't
get
it, yeah.
Right. And nobody ever taught them that the Electoral College serves a very important purpose. And the easiest way to do it, again, in this election is to look at that map. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got half of the U.S. population concentrated in, what, five counties? In the U.S., which, of course, are peppered, they're on East Coast, West Coast, and peppered a little bit along the northern border.
Right.
So let's say, now, this is not correct, but let me sort of, just for ease of conversation, let's say half of your country, half of the population lives in California and New York.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the way the maps look.
Yeah, maps close.
And people are like, well, one vote ought to count. You know, it ought to be one vote. So my vote counts and everything's even. And I'm like, but it's not. We're not really, and I hope people understand what I mean when I say this, because it's going to sound, I don't have a better way to put it. We're not as much a nation of individuals as we are states. We're a nation of states.
Right.
The United States.
You know, what does that do to the farmer if you've got power concentrated in these huge cities?
Well, you would never see the president.
Right.
Or a candidate.
But I mean, policy-wise, what right would we have to get anything accomplished for our area when they're just going to play to California, New York?
Yeah.
That's it. That's all they're going to play to.
You'd never see them. You'd never hear from them. And as you've pointed out, they would have no understanding of the difference, what's needed in the Midwest.
Right. Would be unnecessary.
And that's why we have the Electoral College. No, I mean, when you go to vote, you may have thought you were casting a vote for a Hillary Clinton or a Donald Trump or a Johnson or whoever, but in fact, you were not. You were actually casting a vote for an elector from your state. And the best way to really understand this is to look at the post-election map, which is a sea of red with
a little blue.
Trimmed in blue.
Yeah. Blue by the coast.
And even today, it sounds like there's still some, they're still counting the numbers on the popular vote. And see, here's a good demonstration of why the Electoral College is important, because people are arguing now about who won the popular vote.
Uh-huh.
Think about that. We're arguing a week later about who won.
Yeah.
And two, it protects, it makes it harder to steal votes or fraud. That's the word I'm looking for. Because you effectively have to win states.
Mm-hmm.
Which means you have to go to Tennessee.
Right.
You have to go to Ohio. You have to go to Kansas. If it was just a popular vote, well, then you could stay right where you were and rig a bunch of votes.
Do you know the first presidential candidate who went to all 50 states is?
Oh, huh.
Richard Milhouse Nixon.
Right. Okay.
In 1960.
Yeah, right.
He was going against Kennedy.
So you can see the idea where we're voting for electors as opposed to candidates. It makes it harder to rig votes, because to do that, you have to know where you need to rig the votes.
Right.
You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Hypothetically, if it's just one vote per person, then hypothetically, you could go anywhere, stuff the box.
Right.
You know what I mean?
You go in the middle.
Wouldn't matter.
Yeah.
Wouldn't matter at all. So the Electoral College, folks, is a great thing.
Mm-hmm.
Listen. Our founders knew what they were doing.
Very smart people.
I mean, I'm not saying that everything was perfect, that they got everything right, but they sure got most of it.
For their time, it was the most perfect democracy they could come up with. And they gave it the ability to change and mold to, you know, as the times change too, which it has over the course of, you know, 200 plus years. But yeah, they knew exactly what they were doing with the Electoral College.
Mm-hmm.
There was no doubt
that it was And what they were looking to avoid is what we call the tyranny of the majority.
Mm-hmm.
And that means basically, like, folks in New York and California won't be making policy for everybody else in between.
Right.
Okay, so let's move on to something else. Let's talk about Halloween, what you did. And did you have the girls?
I didn't. They came and visited for about 10 minutes. And then
The reason I say that is now because I just assumed that you had them. Like, I didn't even think about it.
Yeah.
And we ended up going out. We went to, I actually, it was unique. Knock on wood, I was off on Halloween. I did not have to work. Yeah, right.
That's my favorite thing to do on Halloween is listen to the police scanner. That's like, I do that all night.
So I was off. I didn't have to work, and that was awesome. So we went to one of the haunted, we went to a haunted attraction, as it were, which was pretty stinking cool. Not having done one of those in a long time. And we were, and it was me and Gretchen and Nathan, Gretchen's brother. Uh-huh. And we got out there, and I think it was even Nathan that may have been asking. He was like, well, where's Randall? Why didn't he come? And I said something to Faye. I was like, well, you know, he's got kids. He's going to go trick-or-treating with them. And Gretchen was like, I don't think he was taking them trick-or-treating. And I was like, oh, man. I apologize, dude.
That's
I didn't,
okay.
Well, it just didn't occur to me. I just assumed it was a given.
Did you see Nathan's Facebook yesterday?
Uh-uh. What do you have on it?
He met Phil Robertson.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Some kind of fundraiser thing that Gretchen's dad had founded a singing group, a gospel group, and they still perform, and even though Gary's passed away. I'm not sure what the occasion was, what the fundraiser was, but I guess Phil Robertson was in town.
Mm-hmm.
Did you remember where it was?
I didn't see. I knew it was somewhere weird because I was like, what the heck is Nathan? It was in Texas or something.
Were they? Okay. I didn't know if they were. I didn't think they were in Paris. I would have thought we would have heard it. Speaking of celebrities that I'm only mildly acquainted with, who is Lisa Dunham? Who is that person?
Oh, is she the girl that does the...
Her name is in my newsfeed all the time, and she's a real noisy... obnoxious leftist, and everybody tells her to go to.
She does this show.
Is she an actress?
She's an actress, and she does this show called Girls. It's on one of the pay movie channels, and it's pretty vulgar. And she is, and I don't want to talk about people, but she's not like the person that you would want to like see naked on screen.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much what she does the entire show with.
I hear that name constantly.
Mm-hmm.
Constantly. And usually not in a good way.
Yeah.
And it's just, I guess I've just reached that point or that age in life where I'm like, I don't even know who that is.
I watched one show and I was like, no, this isn't for me.
Okay. All right. Anyway, I certainly don't want to give her any further press or anything.
I decided when I grow up, I want to be like Nathan when I grow up. I've decided.
Like what, Gretchen's brother?
Yeah. Yeah. When I grow up, I want to be Nathan.
Why? Tell me what it is that you've seen that appeals to you.
Well, he has zero responsibilities, I think, and that sounds pretty awesome sometimes.
Yeah. Okay. let's move on. I'd like to stay married. It's working out pretty good for me, so I'll... since you didn't really do much trick or treating, or you didn't get to go, then what's your candy situation? Are you?
I'm done with candy. You
probably didn't have that much to begin with, did you? Did you try to then host? Did you defeat trick or treaters?
Yes, I did. I had candy and stuff there, and I didn't have one trick or treater come up the entire time. And you know what I think it is?
You didn't get one.
Well, I was thinking about it. My front porch light is motion activated. And so you've got to be up like pretty close to the porch before it comes on. So I had it on all night, but I didn't go out to see if it was on.
Oh.
You know, so.
So your house would have looked dark to those who were passing by.
Uh-huh.
Oh. Well, okay. We didn't have any leftover because we didn't buy any candy. Now we've got a house full of candy because during election week to soothe my wounds, to salve my emotions, I've been buying discount. That's what's great. Discount candy.
Discount candy.
That's what I did when I left after I finished voting. I went to the dollar store and got discount candy. So curious to know what you might think, I'll tell you. How much candy might one have to eat before they're in danger of dying?
As a diabetic, not much.
Well, yeah, for you, this is for the average person. Now, let's talk about what they call fun size, which is completely ridiculous.
Yeah, there's nothing fun about that.
Yeah. They say that, I guess, so you won't feel bad about eating a whole bunch of them. It's their fun size. As opposed to king size,
but sharing size. Have you seen those sizes? Just like,
and they know you. That just makes you feel bad about it.
Yeah,
or you know, Like where when they call family size and party size, at least you don't, party size, you know, even which may even be bigger, you don't feel as bad about eating one that says family size.
I don't know.
But whoever decided that smaller was more fun.
Yeah, give one to Pumpkin and I've shared, and that's the way to go.
So, yeah, let's talk about, for the context of this conversation. Mm-hmm. Keep in mind those fun size, the small candy bars. Now, how might the average person overdose on candy? It is possible. Mm-hmm. Now, the best we can do is, do you know the expression or the scientific label LD50? You know what that is?
No.
LD is lethal dose.
Oh.
50 meaning that for the average person, if you consume, and this is for medication or anything, whatever the LD50 is on something, it means you have a 50-50 chance of dying.
Ooh.
In other words, you couldn't really make it 100 because you can't say with a scientific fact that, yes, if you take this amount, you will die.
Uh-huh.
So the best way to kind of evaluate these things is to do an LD50, which is, okay, for the average person, if you took this amount, you'd have a 50-50 chance of living or dying.
I like those odds.
You want to be ready to roll the bones?
You'd play those in Vegas if you had 50-50 odds, usually.
So here you go. In order to give yourself a 50-50 chance of consuming a lethal amount, you would have to ingest 13.5 grams of sugar for each pound of your body weight.
Ooh.
So
being fat is like a bonus on this one.
Right. Assuming you didn't have diabetes.
Yeah.
So, you know, then if you're, 200 pounds, then that's 260. Well, you got the 0.5, so 280, I don't know. Something I didn't do like the math. Grams of sugar, and that's a lot of sugar.
Mm-hmm.
And you would have to do it all in one sitting, of course.
Yeah.
And this information comes from the American Chemical Society.
There's actually an American Chemical Society.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, somebody's got to give us this important information, otherwise we'd kill ourselves.
I bet they're government funded. What do you think?
Well, yeah. The average, now how here I have a weight statistic on the average American man. What do you think would be the average weight or for the American male?
I don't know, because you see just as many in skinny jeans now as you see in
You see them on extreme. So how do you find that? How do you find a
say
median?
Like 250 somewhere in there.
Ooh. How about 195?
Really?
Yeah. That's the average weight. So, you know, the skinny folks are offsetting the obese folks. Now,
skinny folks need to eat something to get our target range back
they
up.
They need to eat more candy. Yeah. get our parameters expanded a little bit. You're ruining the curve.
Yeah. Some of y'all get some chicken or something.
Yeah. You're spoiling the curve for the rest of us.
Quit eating kale for a while.
Well, 195.5 pounds to be exact, which, of course, is certainly not either one of us. According to the data collected by the...
I don't think that's ever been me, like, since elementary school.
No, I think even the... in the last... Since I've been an adult, and, well, no, you're right. I don't think since high school. I think the lowest I've been was... I was at 215 right before I went to the police academy, which was 2002. So... I'm definitely not hovering around 215 right now.
No, I've always been a big 6'5". I can't imagine anybody being 6'5" and 190 pounds.
I don't know. I'm not good with that kind of math. I don't know you could pull that off. I guess you could. If you were really lean.
I look like I was sick or something, probably.
I don't know. That number, that 195 pounds, comes from the Center for Disease Control Prevention. At that weight, then that person, let's assume this is an average American male at 195 pounds, he would have to eat and drink nearly 2,640 grams of sugar to have equal odds of living or dying. Okay. Mm-hmm. And of course, this assumes nothing else, like you've pointed, pre-existing conditions or diabetes or any of that kind of stuff.
Has somebody got the capacity to do that, I wonder?
Maybe some of these competitive eaters. who's that guy? Oh, I can't think of his name.
The Japanese guy?
Yeah. Oh, his name is escaping me. He's got a real obvious name. I hear it all the time. It'll come to me.
Yeah.
It'll come to me. So how many fun size Snickers bars? How many fun size Snickers bars do you think you might have to eat before you reached the tipping scales of living or dying?
Let's say 500.
Wow. Boy, that'd be, no, 155.
Oh. Okay.
For the average, okay. Again.
You could probably do that.
You might could get away with 500. I mean, no, you couldn't. Yeah, the diabetes.
I mean, you could probably down 155 fun-size candy bar.
I don't know.
You'd be sick as heck.
But. Yeah. Well, that'd be the challenge, wouldn't it be keeping them down?
Yeah.
Yeah. How would you not throw them up? Or plain M&Ms, you can do fewer of those, 102 fun-size packages of plain M&Ms. I guess they have more sugar.
Yeah.
The threshold is lower for the average American woman. The average American woman weighs 166 pounds. In her case, nearly 2,250 grams of sugar would be enough to make life or death equally likely. To ingest that much sugar, she would have to eat 214 individual Reese's peanut butter cups or 1,527 pieces of candy corn.
Ooh.
1,500 pieces of candy.
You really want to get sick.
I think we had that conversation before, did we? I don't remember. Do you like candy corn? I do.
I'm okay. I'm indifferent to it. I like it. I like it around the holidays. I couldn't do it all year, though. Your favorite piece? Do you like the corn or do you like the little pumpkins?
Probably regular candy corn.
I like the pumpkins. I think
those are okay.
Yeah.
Those in small doses, like a couple of those,
yeah,
I'm done. I couldn't get anywhere near 100 for sure.
Yeah.
And I like sugar or I like candy. Actually, you know, I'm kind of have a weakness for candy, but not a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Like I can't do a lot in a sitting. You know, one candy bar and I'm good.
Yeah.
But I do have a weakness for them, though I might eat them often, more than I should. You might think it would be easy for researchers to find volunteers willing to eat candy for the sake of science. But it simply wouldn't be ethical to ask people to accept a life-threatening risk.
Oh, you know, science is always ethical.
Even if it were covered in chocolate. Chocolate-covered death, right? They said death by chocolate, right? Instead, here's, because you wonder, like, well, how do they know this? Scientists feed sugar to rats. Poor rats.
Oh, God.
We don't care about them. Eat this candy, you rat.
Well, at least he died happy.
Rat candy.
Of the things you could, like, get injected with cancer or lupus or whatever and or die of chocolate. I mean, you got to feel better for the rat dying of
They're
chocolate.
Doing it for science, Randall.
Yeah. I mean, you could like sit there with tumors and like pass out and stuff. But
it's for the betterment of mankind.
Right.
So they feed the sugar to rats and they gradually increase the amount until half of the animals are dead.
Yeah.
Right? Mm. That's where we know 50-50. In the medical literature, the lethal dose known as LD50, from here, it's a matter of extrapolating the LD50 for rats into an estimate for people. So it's still kind of...
Is it bad that I want to feed until there was like one remaining that you knew was like the champion rat? Like the sole survivor?
Oh, two men enter, one man leave. Yeah. Who's the sugar rat?
Yeah, and then you figure out why he's still around, and then you know, that would help society.
And then once you learn what you need to learn from him, you kill him quickly.
Oh yeah,
because he's obviously a danger.
Right, right. I don't want him getting out.
If a rat can eat, you know, 2,000 grams of sugar, that's not a rat I want walking the planet.
Uh-huh.
So if you want to calculate your own LD50, take your body weight in pounds. Multiply it by 13.5, then divide the result. So you multiply, you take 13.5 times your weight, and then you divide that number by the grams of sugar in the candy of your choice. So that way you could do it with any, we'll say, well, I don't like Snickers or M&Ms. I like, whatever, Zagnut, or do they even make those anymore?
I don't know.
100 grand. I like those.
Yeah.
You can see what's on the sugar on those, and then you can, divide the result by the grams of sugar.
You know, I read a thing the other day that they were trying to do on the sugar ratings on stuff. There was a push to put the teaspoon amount on there. Like they'd have a visual representation of how many teaspoons were on there. And there were people lobbying against it because Americans know what teaspoons are and they don't know what grams are. They can't compare that to, you know, like you could say that there was 13 grams and something, you wouldn't know what it is.
Right. But if
you
show the food lobby or the sugar lobby doesn't want them to do that.
Maybe you saw there was two teaspoons in there. Wow. You say, oh, that's a lot of sugar.
But that's a big leap from a gram to a teaspoon or a tablespoon. What'd you say?
Teaspoon, I think.
You can never keep those straight. Which one's which? Is it the tablespoon that's bigger?
Tablespoon's huge compared to a teaspoon. Yeah.
The tablespoon is the big one and the teaspoon is the small. I can never
think of the size of a table versus the size of a...
Yeah. I need a device to help me remember that.
Mnemonic.
I'm 42 years old, and I still to this day cannot, and like subjective and objective. People are like, well, that's subjective or that's objective. I can never keep those straight in my mind. Well, see, I would think, though, a plus to the using the, again, what did you say? They wanted to use teaspoons.
Yeah.
Would be that because, you know, if you think a gram roughly is, you know, for perspective, roughly like what's in a pack of like a sweetener, like a sugar pack or equal or, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
That's roughly a gram. Or if you're looking at by weight, it's like a paper clip. Mm-hmm. So a gram even in itself is a pretty small unit of measurement. So I'm thinking if you know, you could probably put, you know, a good handful of grams into a teaspoon. So it would, I don't know. You see where I'm going with that? I'm thinking like, as opposed to 20 grams, maybe it would be just like 6 or 7.
Yeah, but like the average person, if you were to say, okay, that's got 300 grams of sugar in it, you go, okay. I don't know what that is, but it tastes good, so I'm going to have it.
I'm thinking more like the numbers, because like when I see, because I did something like that the other night. It was a juice drink. Mm-hmm. Or maybe in like a vegetable juice or something. I went to drink out of the fridge, and I looked at the label, and I looked at the number, and the number was really big. I was like, whoa, 300 or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. But then it was like milligrams.
Milligrams, yeah.
So I was like, oh, okay, well, that's not a lot, you know?
Yeah.
So for me, and I would think for most people, the first thing you're evaluating is that number.
Uh-huh.
Like what, you know, if it said a million, what, micrograms or something. You see what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
I would think that number would be more.
And they spent several millions of dollars to keep the tablespoon off. Uh-huh.
I guess they know what they're doing then.
Yeah.
The sugar lobby. So, okay. Well, okay. I guess we'll call it a day for right now. Anyway, I had some other stuff, but we're running a little long. I could get out of here. Gretchen wanted me to take her to dinner tonight. Ooh. She wanted to go to Applebee's for some reason. I go to Applebee's. Very random.
You're getting a talk. That's what it is.
I heard y'all talking about my brother. No, we do that a lot, and we do it early. Uh-huh. Like she gets in from school, usually somewhere between 3 and 3:30. Mm-hmm. And we're old people. We go to dinner early. Well, and it really has more to do with my work schedule. I told somebody this week, I've been watching. Oh, man, there's been so much stuff I've been watching on TV. Oh, I wanted to talk about Walking Dead. We didn't get any of that.
Oh, Negan.
But I have been watching, you know, Poirot.
Uh-huh.
With the detective with the handlebar mustache and Poirot.
Wasn't he Agatha Christie?
Agatha Christie's Poirot. I have been rewatching. I don't know that I ever watched them to begin with. Mm-hmm. Maybe when I was a kid, I saw some of them. But I'm watching them on Netflix. And they're on Netflix. They're great if you like that kind of thing. Generally good family fare, which is interesting because it's got all kinds of murder and stuff in it. But it's done... you know, isn't that weird?
Yeah.
It's still sort of...
it's like the 1960s, 70s style murder, like where it's a assumed murder, but not like you don't see the actual act.
No gore. Right. Yeah, right. And this has been a week or so ago. We'd come in after church on Sunday, and I was sick, too. I'd been sick that week. And I came in, and it's... Because once we get out of church on Sunday afternoon, that's kind of sort of when my very brief weekend begins.
Yeah.
Like then I'm off that evening and the next day.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of the golden time for me.
Yeah.
So I come in, I hit the Netflix and turned on Poirot, and I told Gretchen, I was like, I just want some quiet time so I can watch my mystery stories and take a nap.
You've turned into my grandpa.
I know. She said, you want to watch your mystery stories and take a nap. Okay, I'll have the duty nurse come by and check on you in a little while.
my dad hasn't worked in a long, he's pretty sick, but he used to watch soap operas during the day, and he would get like into them. Like he could tell you the whole storyline and everything.
Oh, wow.
He'd watch Days of Our Lives.
I was going to ask you if he had a favorite.
Yeah, Days of Our Lives, yep.
Do those still do well? People still watch those? Are they on? I don't hear anybody talk about them. I think it'd be pretty hard to compete with in a day and age with Netflix and stuff. Where even people at home during the day, if you want to be the sexist generalization, assuming it's a housewife or whatever, even if that dynamic is still there, that person, that housewife or whoever, still has the option to watch anything on demand.
Yeah, or you know, there's a lot of talk shows now and The Chew and Dr. Phil and all that stuff comes on in the day.
But again, all of that I'm thinking is competing with. I can turn on Netflix and pick any movie I want.
Right,
I can
no
pick
commercials any show
that
anything.
I want. I can turn on Hulu and watch anything I want. Mm-hmm. I would think that would hurt the soap opera market, but yeah. I don't know. I never, it's funny you mentioned, I have not even thought of soap operas.
Yeah.
I don't even know if they're still on. I don't hear people talk about them. I would guess they are.
Telenovelas.
I don't know anybody that watches them. Telemundo. Yeah. okay. All right. So, yeah, somebody, I made that comment, and another friend was like, yeah, I know what you're feeling, because we went and ate dinner, you know, like 4 or 4:30 the other night. And I said, well, we eat dinner early all the time, because when Gretchen gets in, we go eat dinner or we have something here at the house, and then I go back to sleep because I got to go into work at midnight.
Yes.
So early dinner is
Sleeping
good.
Beauty.
And if I wait too late, then I get real full, and then my nap is shortened, and then when I wake up...
You're cranky.
Well, you know how it is, like when you eat too much, and then you go to sleep, and you get up, and you feel even worse
because
you're still full, and you're like, ugh. So I like to have plenty of time to work off my food sleeping. And maybe if I didn't live like that, I could get closer to 195.5 pounds.
I don't think there's a shot for me.
Nah. Yeah. Reasonable goals.
Yeah.
We need to set reasonable goals. But nothing else, don't overdose on sugar.
If I get to 195 pounds, I'm going to try it. I'm going to try the 50-50 challenge.
No, don't do that. All those rats have already given their lives so that you don't have to. Rat candy. Rat candy, super rats. All right. Okay, we'll call it a day for today. We'll come back in a week or two. And, man, try to cover some of this. Maybe I just need to, like, commit. We come back, we'll talk about Walking Dead. We'll talk about, because I keep making notes on the shows that I'm watching, and then we come in here and never talk about the shows and stuff too. So, but I mean, fair enough. It's been a busy week. We had to do a little bit of election talk, I guess. So, I know nobody wants to hear it. I don't even really particularly want to talk about it, but it seems weird to sit down and like
it's like the elephant
not
in the room.
Not address it. Yeah, a little bit. So, please just be kind to each other. And listen, I'm telling you. Here's my prescription for you. Turn off the news, turn off the internet, and you'll be amazed how quickly this will go away, because once you get your head out of the TV and out of the internet, you'll look around and you will not see this among the people that you know and in your community. I'm telling you. Take a break from the internet, from social media, and from arguing with one another, and you'll see that real life is a lot different.
Amen.
Okay. We'll come back in a couple of weeks. Until then, till we see you again, thanks for joining us. Thanks for hitting the download button. And we appreciate you telling a friend. Please tell a friend. We haven't had any new likes in a while. We need some new likes out there. Somebody needs to get up on the Facebook. So
yeah.
All right. Until we see you then, I'm Pastor Dave with Randall, the Armor Bearer. We are
They That Believe.